Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. With Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 104 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2.com. With me on the line, once again, via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton the Guru Muller. How are you?
Okay, so this week I've become Mr. Shelton the Guru. Last week I think I was just Shelton the Guru. Mr. Okay. Is this because you just are finding increasing reasons, greater reasons to respect me more every week? Or I would have thought after all this time the reverse would have been true.
Maybe it's just respect for your years, matey.
My years. 45 in April. Can you believe it? Man.
Yeah, okay. Hey, it's my 40th this year, so.
Oh, look, half your luck, buddy. Yeah, I'm 40 plus sales tax. So, you know. or GST, as we call it here in Australia. I'm 40 plus GST, but that's okay. It's a good thing. I'm incredibly good looking, so it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. How you been?
Mate, very well. And yourself?
Good to hear. Very, very well. Very busy. Had to drive to anybody who knows Australia, from Melbourne, where I live, of course, to the New South Wales border yesterday to do a shoot for a company in a factory. I had to go up. We were in this industrial sort of factory photographing these machines. And I had to go up. You know those little trucks that move around? They have these scissor-style lifts that take you up. Well, the factory is hot enough as it is, but of course, once you go up, and I asked for the thing to be fully extended, you know, as high as we could go, and man, it gets hot up there. So I didn't come
inside
back
a warehouse.
Inside, I was a factory, you know, working to a factory. So man, I was, you know, and of course, it was about a 4-hour drive up and a 4-hour drive back.
Yep.
You know, and about a 4-hour shoot. So it was a long day yesterday. So if my brain does not function too well today, it's, you know, a mixture.
We know why.
We know why. I'll do my best. I'll do my best. We've got some interesting emails and things to handle today.
Absolutely.
Of course, we're going to continue on and begin our theme of wedding photography. And the response to this has been very positive, hasn't it, Bruce?
Yeah,
it's been
definitely.
Nice to see. And of course, there's so much wedding photography on Flickr, and and you know, so much wedding photography on, you know, that's spoken about in photo forums and things. It's obviously obviously a very popular field and a desired arena of endeavor for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the domestic market is something that a lot of photographers desire to get into because it's not that hard to break into. It's just hard to sometimes pull off.
Yeah.
But the market itself is there, and you know, there's no problem with it. So it's easy to do, easy to get into, hard to do, as we discussed last week. But it's been very, very well received, which I'm glad. I'm glad that we can be of some assistance.
Yeah.
So we'll begin that. But we have a couple of emails.
We do.
Now, do you want to talk about Jason's email, or shall I?
You can do it.
All right. Hi, guys, Jason says. First off, great podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed our weekly chats. I'm glad he looks at it that way. Weekly chats. I like that. Keep up the good work. In episode 102, you suggested that we look at our photos and find our style and share that. Okay, well, here it is, and I did what I found. I started by going through my keepers, but after a while, I started going through all of my pictures that I've taken in the last few years. After reviewing my work for a while, I found that to duplicate my style, you should do the following. I have attached this PDF so I could show some examples.
And we'll include the PDF in the show notes.
I think we should just leave it there and let people open this PDF. Jason, you're just, mate, you should do stand-up. This is hilarious.
Absolutely.
I absolutely loved it. So if you want to duplicate Jason Page's style of photography, open up the PDF off audio2u.com and have a look. Jason, thank you for going to that work.
It was great.
Maybe I should go back and listen to the podcasts again. Smile. For your information, you can put this in the crap section of the crap giggle tip show. I will send a serious email with what I found for real later on. But Jason, thanks for going to that effort. Listen, you guys, you've got to download this and then have a bit of a look, because it is a bit of crap and it is a bit of giggle. Sorry, Jason, but of course that's what you intended it to be. But no, it is seriously giggle. And but of course, I'm looking forward to seeing your real stuff, mate. Good on you for doing that. The other one, of course, was from Orlando Mergal in of Puerto Rico Photography.com. And he writes a fairly very large email here. We really appreciate it. He said, I discovered Shutters Inc. on iTunes a couple of months ago, and I've listened to all the episodes. So in 2 months, he's listened to 100-odd episodes, and he says, wow. I absolutely love it. Yeah, he's been a busy fellow. We're glad we have been of some help, Orlando. He goes on to talk about his history in photography using film, and of course, he still uses Kokin filters almost every day, especially my circular polarizers, my neutral densities, and my graduated grays. There is absolutely, unequivocally, no way you can achieve the same effect in Photoshop. And I'm glad you feel that way. As we've spoken here often, you know, it is about creating what you can in the camera and then taking the rest into the darkroom if you can. So, you know, into the digital darkroom. So he says, since I hear that you are the resident Kokin guru, he's obviously been to the Kokin website and seen me there. I wanted to ask you, what is the best way to clean these filters? Since they are plastic, I am afraid to scratch them or ruin them if I use any kind of solvent. I tried the Kokin website, but even though their filters are excellent, their website needs a lot of work. Agreed. Particularly in the way of information. I'd also like to suggest a couple of subjects. We'll talk about that in a minute. But for the moment, I just clean mine, to be honest with you, with a bit of breath and a microfiber cloth, Orlando, and I've never used a solvent on them. In fact, I don't use many liquids at all. I just a little bit of and a microfiber cloth, and I find I have absolutely no problem removing fingerprints or whatever else may have got on there. I really think it's that simple. I am not a fan of using lens cleaning liquids and things like that. I just don't like it. I think I've never had a problem just with a little bit of breath and a microfiber cloth or a very high quality lens tissue. So let me know how you go with that. It's a simple answer, but you know, Occam's razor is a scientific principle, which means that usually the simplest answer is the truth. So I hope that you find that helpful. I would like to suggest a couple of subjects. You said that you're on podcast 103, that you have to know what you're good at before you embark on it professionally. True. You also have to hone your skills continuously till the day you die. I don't know whether I actually put it that way, but yeah, true. If you're still shooting on the last day of your life, then then you're doing well. Back in the 90s, I considered wedding photography, which we're going to be talking about today, and yeah, we talked about last week. But I soon realized that I didn't have the three P's that at the time were absolutely necessary for success: personality, patience, and a perfect eyesight. Remember back then there was no autofocus cameras, and the very thought of shooting an out-of-focus wedding sent shivers down my spine. Since then I've concentrated on landscapes, still life, and corporate projects. After all, these subjects don't sweat, get drunk, or cranky. Have you ever considered producing a podcast about landscape photography or still life? I've also heard you say several times that you are afraid of running out of subjects. Have you ever considered interviewing other professionals? These wouldn't necessarily need to be photographers. I'm just, so it seems, Bruce, I'm just not good enough all of a sudden, you know. These wouldn't need to be photography. I'm sorry, Orlando, just kidding. They could be software publishers, ad agency creative directors, graphic artists, magazine editors, photo lab executives, etc. Interesting idea. I'll consider that, Orlando. Thank you very much for that. After 103 episodes of Shutters Inc., we are all absolutely convinced that you are excellent at what you do. But if you really want to take the show to the next level, maybe it would help to expand the knowledge base and vary the subject matter. Absolutely true. So we'll consider that. And thank you very much for your suggestion, Orlando. And all the best to you at PuertoRicoPhotography.com. I wonder where you're situated. Because I can't... There's a 787 prefix in brackets. Is it Orlando? What's MA? Is that Massachusetts?
Well, if it was in America, it would be Massachusetts.
Yeah, MA. I'll have to find out, Orlando. You'll have to tell me.
Maybe he lives in the US but travels to Puerto Rico a lot. I don't know.
Yes. Well, if I went to his website, which I might just do while we're speaking, I can find out. But thanks for Orlando. An excellent idea. And, you know, we will consider that. We have talked about landscapes, of course, in early podcast, and maybe we can revisit that. Still life, I don't know that we've ever talked about, and it certainly is worth talking about. Landscape photography, you can never talk about often enough. We've been through the principles, but perhaps we can actually talk about it in detail a little bit more. We'll certainly consider that. Opening up Orlando's website, PuertoRicoPhotography.com. Carolina. He's in Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what, but, you know, so Puerto Rico photography is obviously based on your origins there, Orlando. But either way.
Could the MA be a, Master of Arts degree or something like that? Maybe.
Yes,
I don't know. I'm just speculating here.
Could be. You'll have to tell us, Orlando, but it's nice to have you there in the fraternity. And thank you all. And I hope you've all been visiting, as I've tried to as well, the Shutters Inc. Flickr site. We'll certainly be looking for you there. Actually, I've just received a comment from Andrew Darrell Gungadu. You might remember we've met Darrell before.
Yep.
Two comments on my blog. Listen, gang, thank you. If you drop by my blog, which, you know, just gives you a bit of a rundown of what I do each week and some of my thoughts, leave a comment. I'd love to see that you're there. I really appreciate you doing that. Darrell has given us a couple of comments on my blog. He talks about my technique for adding sunshine on cloudy days, and we talked about that a few podcasts ago, where I did the shoot with Australian yachtsman John Bertrand, using, as Graham Anderson, hello Graham, refers it to, my sunshine kit. I was on a workshop the other day on Saturday, and Graham came, and he's of course a Shutters Inc. listener and a good friend. And he said, "Oh, and I've got a sunshine kit in my gadget bag." And I just laughed, but I didn't know what the heck he was talking about. And he says, "Well, you know what that is?" And I said, "Well, actually, no, I'm just laughing, but I don't know what the hell you're talking about." And he said, "My sunshine kit, you know, 6 inches or 4 square inches of orange cellophane and an elastic band. My sunshine kit. I've got a few sunshine kits in my gadget bag." So, you know, Darrell talks about that. And I just wanted to thank you for leaving the comment, Darrell. I really appreciate that. Also, the portrait of Tin Van that you're talking about on my blog, the Vietnamese bride that I photographed recently, was window light. If you want to go to the blog and find out, or my Shutters Inc. Flickr site, the shot that Darrell is referring to is a high-key black and white portrait of a Vietnamese bride. Basically, it was just she was leaning against a white wall in the reception venue where they were about to have their reception. I just got her to lean against the wall. And of course, I metered for the white wall, which meant overexposing a stop or two. And then I just basically, the rest is just a bit of Photoshop to make it a little more high key. But there's no studio lighting. It's just window light. Very, very simple. I saw the wall, thumping great big window next to it. And of course, that's just heaven for a photographer doing a wedding. So, Darrell, it was as simple as that, mate. And, you know, sometimes the best photography is. So no great miracles there, but I did love the result. And I did the entire bridal party, one by one, against that wall, so that would all have the same kind of portrait. I did the groom, the bride, the bridesmaids, and all the groomsmen as single portraits against that wall. So it worked out really well. So I hope that answers your question. But we should go on to talking about wedding photography, because indeed I'd say that's why many people have anxiously tuned in. And as you suggested, Bruce, perhaps one of the first places that we can start is an equipment list.
Yep.
And I think that's not a bad idea. I was just going to launch straight into the home of the bride, but we'll get the equipment list done first. And this is interesting, and I'm glad you've mentioned it, because I did a photographic workshop in Rockhampton, Queensland. It was a wedding workshop. It was very, very popular, and yep. I'm being asked down here to do more wedding photography workshops, and I will. I'll get them organized. One of the people who came was a photographer and named Tanya. Hello, Tanya, if you're listening. And Tanya basically came, and she shoots weddings in Rockhampton, and she came and basically said that her equipment was what I was looking at, which was her DSLR, her medium-range zoom, and no flash. Basically, that was it. She went on weddings with one DSLR, like a straight out of the camera store bought kit, and, you know, photographed weddings with it. And I think she learned a lot. Well, I know she learned a lot from the wedding workshop, even just in terms of the equipment you need. And we have to be realistic about this. You can't just go out and buy a camera and then run off and shoot a wedding because you've got a good camera. It just won't work for the reasons we talked about a lot last week.
Certainly not if you want to do justice to the couple.
No, absolutely not. You know, I mean, anybody can do that. And I mean, no offense to anybody listening who's doing that. It's just, please, let's, you know, where there's a profession here, and this is the one day of their life, and we have been paid to do something professional. So, yes, you should have a DSLR or two. I always take two. If you can afford two, it's a good idea for two reasons. One, DSLRs can break down, and if you're suddenly shooting a wedding and you've got no backup, what are you going to do? You just, you know, a camera is a piece of equipment that can break down like anything. And, you know, but you know, the other good reason for a second body is the ability to have your two lenses ready to go. And I basically shoot a wedding with two lenses, which we'll go into in a minute. But if, for instance, you're shooting something and bang, over here something else happens, and it's one of those moments you don't have a lot of time to capture, or just for the sheer convenience of it, if you've got two DSLRs hanging one off each shoulder, one with one lens, one with the other, you don't need to go through your bag, rifle through your lenses, put it on, change it by which time your photograph has gone or the feeling behind the photograph is gone. So I carry two DSLR cameras, my Nikon D200 and now my Fuji S5. I had the D100 before.
Yep.
And I work between the two of them on a wedding. The S5 usually has my 85mm 1.8 and my Nikon D200, which I'll going to think about going to the D300 one day. From what I hear, apparently the D300 is what the D200 was to the D100. It's just this little quantum leap forward. So awesome. But the D200 with my 17-50 2.8, and I work most of my wedding photography on those two lenses. So already we've got two DSLRs. That's what I would suggest. A medium range zoom that is consistent in aperture, I would suggest. Something relatively fast like a 2.8. My 17-50 2.8 is ideal. Of course, there will be other lenses. Mine is the Tamron. You know, there are, you know, Nikon versions, Canon versions, and depending on what you justify, afford, etc. I only know that my Tamron is an excellent lens for the price, and you know, my relationship with Tamron it does not come into my evaluation of the lens. It is an excellent lens and half the price of many of its, you know, named contemporaries. So, you know, I would definitely say you need one of those simply because it's an all-rounder. You need it for a lot of getting in there work when you're stuck in the middle of things. You know, you can zoom in and out, bang, bang, bang. But I also like the idea of a fast aperture and a consistent aperture. If you set it at 2.8 at 17, it's going to be 2.8 at 50. Your exposure remains the same. And of course, it's nice and fast. Your minimal depth of field if you want it at 50, just to highlight the subject. If you're working indoors, the fast aperture is handy. You know, all those kinds of things are really good idea to have. Mm-hmm. For those who've listened to this podcast for the past 200 years, you'll know that I love and live in my 85 1.8. And Heather, if you're listening, I know that you've recently fallen in love with yours. Heather Morris is a newcomer to the podcast, but I've been in touch with her for a little while, just as photographer and fellow photographers. She lives in Kentucky, in the United States, and shoots weddings there. Delightful person. And hello if you're listening, Heather. She's just bought herself an 85mm 1.8 and got a message from her saying, "Oh my God, why did I not buy this lens earlier? Why did I not take your advice earlier?" And for all the reasons that we have discussed, it is a great lens to have on a wedding. It is fast, and you really want to avoid using as much on-camera flash as possible at a wedding. I just believe that. So an 85mm 1.8 allows you to do things inside that you otherwise are not permitted to do. You know, it's a stop and a third faster than a 2.8, so it's going to take you from one shutter speed to the next. It will. It's an 85mm, a beautiful portrait length. It's prime, so it sets the parameters and you work with it. You know, we were talking about this in my people photography workshop the other day, and Graham piped up and he said, "Yeah, well, you know, you have to move in and out. The lens is what it is. You have to do the moving because it will always give you the same perspective," which is a beautiful thing to know. It's comforting to know that when that lens goes on, you know exactly how it's going to see, and you do the moving. And it will never change how a scene is seen because of what it is. It's a prime lens, and it's good for photographers to get to know their prime lenses and work with them. It's sharp. At 85mm, if you've focused on the eyes, man, they are pin sharp. Even at 1.8, which I very rarely take mine off of, it is pin sharp. And you've got to be careful, of course, but because the depth of field is fairly minimal, but that's the beautiful thing about a lens like that. People look at photographs taken with a lens like that, And they wonder what it is about the photograph that is so beautiful, and they can't put their finger on it, unless, of course, they're photographers, and they know that it's bokeh, minimal depth of field, highlighted subject, available light. They know, they, you know those things as a photographer. They don't. All they know is that that's a beautiful photograph. That lens has given you the opportunity to make that photograph, and that's why, you know, we are what we are. We're photographers and we need the equipment. So far we've got two lenses, a 17-50 2.8 or thereabouts, whatever you want. It could be a 28-80 2.8, whatever, a medium range zoom, and of course an 85, a 90, a 100, a prime portrait length lens that is fast, has a lovely bokeh and minimal depth of field. So that would be another one that I would use. Now that is basically my walk around equipment on a wedding day. I keep a flash on one camera, and I, as anybody also knows who's been listening, I do love my off-camera flash, which Nikon affords with ease, and I you know, absolutely love it. So yes, you want a good flash. The pop-up flash on your camera is just a waste of time for professional work. It works for other things, it's there, it's handy if you need it, it's a great little fill flash, blah, 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 but it just, please, if that's your flash, you know, it's not going to work. So you really do need a good flash. It should be preferably one that talks to your camera, because a wedding is if you can get out of the hard process of having to think about, you know, your apertures and guide numbers and all those things that come with flash, then if you can get out of that, that's great. Take advantage of the technology and get a dedicated flash. It should be powerful. It should have a bounce facility and swivel facility. It should talk to your camera and your camera to it. And if it is part of a flash system that talks to other flash guns, buy two or three if you want to, whatever. But make sure that you have a good, powerful flash gun. Perhaps you might need some level of diffuser on that flash gun. I've never found them to be that fantastic. You know, if anything, you want to soften your flash, use an Omni Bounce or something like that. But they're really not absolutely necessary. So there, that's another piece of very handy equipment. A tripod, a good, easy to use tripod that stands, you know, fairly high. Again, I've seen photographers, you know, I've watched them, professionals in inverted commas, turn up with these, oh, Bruce, just terrible tripods. You know, what is the point of putting your camera on
something
that
thing?
Something
they picked up at the $2 shop.
I reckon. You know, look, a tripod is a heavy piece of equipment, but if it's going to be a good tripod, it will be a heavy piece of equipment. And so, you know, deal with it, okay? Just deal with it. You need a good tripod, especially if you're going to be working indoors and trying to avoid flash.
Question you know, for you.
Yeah.
Do you hire an assistant when you shoot a wedding?
Well, I was going to get to that. Sometimes I do, or sometimes I'm asked by photographers, can I come along?
Right.
In which case, I take advantage of them and work them very hard and say, yes, that's a wedding. Do you really want to do this?
Because the reason I asked was because when I shot Dan and Kate's wedding in back in September, I just found a girl, Ashley, who's the daughter of some friends of ours, and she's like 16, 17, mm-hmm. You know, just at the point of she was about to leave school, and I thought, you know, she'd probably appreciate $50 for a day's work.
Yep.
Which was not really hard work when it's all said and done. I was just walking around with a camera bag in one hand, a tripod in the other, yep. And, you know, hand me a lens when I ask for it.
Yes.
And she was really happy to do that.
Yes.
And, you know, I didn't charge Dan and Kate a great deal for the wedding because they were friends. But for me, the $50 I gave Ashley was chicken feed.
Worth but, every cent.
Yeah, but she was happy as. She thought mm-hmm. it was so cool that she was there on a professional photography shoot as an assistant. She just thought that was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
She was happy. She got, you know, she got $50, you know, play money, mm-hmm. and it lightened my load.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as you get older, in all honesty, you know, I used to, when I was in my 20s, man, I could run all day, and I still do. I'm fit and I'm healthy, but, you know, I get a little more tired these days on a wedding. And, you know, you're carrying your gear and all that kind of thing. So even just for the simple logistics of having an assistant, your assistant is another valuable piece of equipment. Really,
absolutely.
Because you know, you don't want to get tired shooting a wedding because you're, no matter how hard you try, once your brain starts to die and your body starts to die, you just can't pull it off like you used to.
Yep.
And it's just a reality of life. So if someone else is there to go run back to the car and get your tripod or get your lens out of your gadget bag or just simply carry the stuff,
yeah.
You know, running back and forth to the bride as you set up a shot,
mm-hmm.
and you'll do her dress, you'll foof her dress, you know, and it'll fall beautifully. But after a couple of photographs, you know, it'll change, she'll move and it'll change. Running back and forth from your tripod to the bride all the time is tiring, even if she's only 10 or 20 meters away or whatever. It's tiring because you bang, bang, and then if you do that all day, so get your assistant to foof the dress, you know, or
yep.
a bridesmaid, but usually your assistant will know a little more because he's been watching very carefully. A bridesmaid is usually standing there trying to look pretty. So, get me that lens, would you? Change lenses for me, would you? Put batteries in this flash for me, would
yep.
you? That kind of thing just takes your mind off all of the, you know, perfunctory things of a wedding that can be taken care of by, a $50 assistant. That person who's the assistant is learning a lot
yeah.
on their wedding day, learning a lot. And people ask to come with me. Can I come with you on a wedding? You don't have to pay me. You don't have to do anything. I'll just come. I just want to watch. And I'm happy to have them along. If I'm not paying them, I don't work them too hard, but you know, they're happy to help. That's the playoff. And I'm glad you mentioned it because yes, an assistant is a valuable accessory. And if you haven't been an assistant on a wedding yet, ask to be one before you go and shoot a few yourself. So there's our next piece of equipment, your assistant. Now, of course, you're pretty well covered, I reckon, to handle a wedding with just that gear.
Yep.
You're ready to go. A couple of other things you might want to think about, of course, are a reflector, you know, like a fold-out reflector. An assistant is great there because
yep.
there will be times when you want to reflect a little bit of light back. And the difference that can make in a photograph is phenomenal. A little bit of reflected light back on a face, you can direct your light any way you want. Between a reflector and off-camera flash, it's just a beautiful way to work light on your wedding. And this is the thing, this is what I was talking about before with the 85mm lens, that people look at your photos and they just don't know what it is, but that is a beautiful photograph. Now, what you've done as a photographer is just manipulated the light and, you know your craft. But that's the difference between their photos as they stand there and take them, you know, and yours as you stand there and take them. And your reputation will just go through the roof when people see that for some reason, some magical, magical, inexplicable reason, your photographs just look, compared to mine, oh, look at that. And your name will just spread far and wide and your fame will be the thing of legends because, you know, you've created something. They don't know how you did it. You just worked your magic, your miracles. You are the messiah of photography and they'll recommend you to everybody. It's just a good way. It's good things to think about. So if you're saying to yourself, look, an 85mm lens, that's $800 or whatever it might cost. So what? It is a necessary piece of equipment, I believe, to shoot different, you know, or a professional gear. We'll create professional photographs. That's what we're going to do, then do it. And ask anybody who's bought one of those lenses, in my recommendation, and they'll tell you, I should have done it sooner.
And I would add to all of that, you know, what Shelton's covered is, you know, absolutely essential gear. And I would say the two things that I would put at the very top of the, you know, second tier of essential equipment, the things that are not absolutely essential, but the things that you would go for next. The two things at the top of that list would be an off-camera cable for your flash if the flash is not a wireless flash, so that you can get your flash off-camera. And the next thing would be a circular polarizing filter.
Yeah, yeah. I don't admittedly use a polarizer much on weddings.
Really?
But, no, I actually haven't. And it may be something that on your recommendation I'll consider.
I don't think you need to be taking recommendations from me just quietly.
No. The stuff I've learned from people, you know, no one is ever above taking recommendations, mate. No, I think you are. Consider that. It's actually an interesting thought. What is the advantage to you that you found on a wedding day of using a polarizing filter?
Just that, you know, on the assumption that you do end up with a really glorious day, the circular polarizer to me can just help saturate colors just that little bit more.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
I mean, okay, you've got a D200, which does a gorgeous job of colors, and I'm not knocking the Konica Minolta 7D. I mean, I love the camera, but I do find that the circular polarizer just gives it that little bit of extra punch
yes.
in the colors.
Yes, and it saves you having to do it later in the post.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a good idea. And of course, for deepening, if you've got a blue, beautiful blue sky day and the clouds are there, if there's some beautiful cloud structure in the sky, that kind of thing always works well. So, yeah, absolutely. A couple of other things, naturally, are spare batteries. Never, ever turn up with a wedding without spare batteries for your flash, spare batteries for your camera. A couple of big, solid, very reliable cards, compact flash cards or SD cards, whatever you're using. Make sure they're good quality cards. Make sure that they are large enough to handle your wedding, and you're not running around trying to, you know, deleting photos at the last minute, trying to make room for others. But look, another couple of things you might want to consider: an 80 to 200 2.8, just for compression, really powerful compressed shots of the bride and groom, and maybe the odd candid. But you don't want to be schlepping a whole bunch of gear around on a wedding. You know, know what you work with, and schlepping unnecessary gear is just going to make you tired. If my wife hears this podcast, she will say, "You hypocrite, you take everything on a wedding." She wouldn't say it like that. She has a much nicer voice than that. But she would say that. But usually I work between two lenses all day. My 17 to 52-8, my 85-1.8, and then for the odd picture, I'll pull out my 80 to 200 2.8. Usually at every wedding, I'll use that at least once. But I wouldn't need to. I just choose to. My flash, of course, and the items that I've mentioned. So that's basically it. So if you've got that gear, ready to go. If you're not, if you haven't got that gear, slowly work towards getting a few of those items, and you'll find that, you know, they will certainly be of benefit. So you've got this gear, you've packed your car, you're headed off to the bride's home. The bride's home is a great place to get your head together. It's the place where I get into the zone. You know, you've left your home, it's a Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, you've left home, you're not in the zone yet. Sometimes, in fact, the bride and groom wants you to stop off at the groom's place beforehand. Now, the photographs of the groom are fairly straightforward. If you want me to talk about it, let me know. But the principles are much the same as the photographs of the bride. But the groom's home is a great place to get zoned in, because you need to get zoned in to shooting the rest of the wedding. You've got to get into photographer mode. But so you've arrived at the home of the bride, and I always suggest that you arrive before she's ready. For two reasons. As I said, you get chance to zone in, you get comfortable, they get comfortable with you, depending on how well you know each other, you also get great candid photographs of the bride getting ready. Now, each bride will be different in her allowance of access. If you're a female photographer, if you're a lady photographer, you may be allowed access into the room while the bride is in lingerie, or even less. Because she'll, you know, she wants the whole process of the getting into the lingerie, getting into the dress, getting her hair, whatever. If you're a male photographer, naturally different brides will have different levels of comfort. So what I usually say is, I'll follow the bride around as she's eating toast and curlers in her hair, and I'll take photographs as she's getting her makeup done, and very candid black and white available light photographs or bounce flash photographs. Then when she gets into her dress, I will tell her, look, give me a hoy when you feel it's, you know, give me a yell when you feel it's man safe. That's my expression, man safe. When you want me to come into that room, when you're comfortable with me coming in, just let me know. Now, she is going to forget, probably, because she's busy getting her dress on. So you tell two or three bridesmaids the same thing. And then you stand at the door, and you, every now and again, you say, "Hello, photographer waiting," and you'll either get a laugh or they'll, "Oh, sorry, you know, come on in," or, "Not yet, not yet, not yet." And you realize that the bride is in various states of undress and doesn't feel comfortable with you coming in. But the photographs of her getting into the dress should be window lit. I always find that works beautifully. There's a very lovely sort of home quality, very comfortable quality to window light. You get position, if you can, the bride in a place where you can photograph her that it's beautifully window lit, and you get these really lovely intimate photos of the bride, her girls, getting her into the dress, you know, doing it up at the back, putting on the veil, all those other things, that process is very, very important to the bride, because it's that moment where she's becoming a bride. And they love those photographs. You know, they will suit you well in the album. And they love also the fact that there's an interplay between them, you know, themselves, the bride, and the bridesmaids. At this stage, too, I always read the Bridesmaids, the Shelton Mueller Bridesmaid Act of 1987. I basically tell the bridesmaids, I pull them aside and I say, listen, girls, we're going to have fun today, but, you know, I need your help. The word bridesmaid is a composite word. It is a composite word of two words, bridesmaid. You know, you're here for her. You're here to help her. If she needs food, that's your job. If she needs a drink, it's your job. If her dress needs adjusting, that's your job. If her hair needs doing, that's your job. If her makeup needs touching, that's your job. If she needs anything, that is your job. She shouldn't have to do it. So you are a bridesmaid. And the big help to you as a photographer in that is that if you've read them the Riot Act, you know, you do it in a very friendly and humorous manner, but they know that this is what you expect from them today as a photographer. And that if you call on them, here, can you hold these flowers? Can you hold the bouquet? Stand, you know, don't be too far away. Be on hand because she's going to need you. Can you hold the bouquet? Can you get her a drink? Would you mind adjusting her veil? La, 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 la. All those things. And usually there'll be one particular bridesmaid in the group that will take that seriously, very seriously, and others maybe not so much. And, you know, work with your bridesmaids very carefully and closely during the day. They can be your lifesavers. Following that, of course, once the bride is in her dress, she's made up, she is a bride, you're down to the formal stuff. Naturally, of course, you'll be candiding all day, but you are getting stuck into the formal stuff now. Usually it's best to get the easy stuff out of the way, simply because the bride is a bit flustered. You know, she's had a very busy morning. She's had probably a late night. She didn't maybe get much sleep. But if you start then immediately into the portraits and all that kind of thing, she's just not going to be ready, really. So I found I usually like to take the photographs of her with her mum, her with her dad, her with her siblings, in singles and in groups, her with each of the bridesmaids, and then with the bridesmaids as a group in that section, so that she also is getting into the zone as you are getting into the zone. You're becoming a photographer, right? Because you haven't been photographing for a few days or a week or whatever. You're becoming a photographer. You're getting into the zone, and so is she. She's getting into the zone of photography, and you're making it fun. She's getting comfortable. She realizes this is not going to be difficult. She's going to enjoy this, and away you go. So the photographs of the bride with the people she loves are simple, straightforward. You can set them up in one little place in the living room or wherever you are. Just, you know, get her to stand there, people in, people out, people in, people out. You're getting the snapshots out of the way. Now she's in the zone. And you tell her, you know what, and you spit in your hands and you rub them together and you say, now we're going to work some magic. Now we're going to have some fun. You ready for some fun? She says, yes, I'm ready for some fun. And then, of course, it's time for you to do a full-length portrait of the bride. And you'll need a little bit of room and possibly the most beautifully naturally lit area of the home. Here is where sometimes it's a little bit difficult because not all homes are beautiful, not all homes are beautifully lit. So I can't tell you what to do in that situation other than to, as we've often said here, find the light and put them in it. I was in a home the other day, a very average suburban home, brick veneer home as Australian homes are. And the best place that I could do the photograph of the full length of the bride, which you need the dress shot, was to put her in a hallway. Now, it was a very drab hallway, just a hallway with doors. But all I did was I put her down the hallway and I opened the door to the bathroom. And there was, of course, light coming through the bathroom window into the bathroom, which was a light-colored room. It spills out onto the hallway. The hallway, I closed every other door in the hallway, so it was dark. And all I had was light spilling onto the bride's dress and onto her as she stood next to the open door in the hallway. I will send you that shot if you're interested.
Yeah.
So you can have a look. Very, very drab, but it worked. Because anywhere else, it just would have looked pretty kitsch. And I hate kitsch. I love my light, you know, and I'll use the light to get the shot. When I took the photograph, I walked up to the bride and I say, that's what I've got. Do you like that? And she said, I've never, ever believed my hallway could look like that. Well, it's just light, isn't it, Bruce? It's just light. You know, they don't see themselves in light, you know.
No.
And she loved it, but it just took a moment's thought. What am I going to do, you know? And I just remembered my old adage, find the light and put him in it. Well, in this case, it was make the light and put him in it. And sometimes making the light in a bride's home is as simple a matter of opening the front door. You know, getting her to stand in the foyer of her own home, open the front door, let the light spill. And don't use flash, just wherever you can find a window, an open door. It will be a far more beautiful shot than just bashing away with flash. It really will. If you have to use flash, if there is no open door, no, you know, window, bounce the flash off a wall or a ceiling. But please, don't do it full on, really. We've talked about that. I don't need to go into that. The other things that you need to do at the bride's home, of course, are a beautiful head and shoulder portrait of the bride. That is a window light portrait. It should be tight. You should get the shoulders of the bride on a 45-degree angle to the camera with her face looking toward into the camera. That creates different, you know, it creates form. It gives her a nice figure. And, of course, get her to engage with the lens. If you're using a nice 85mm 1.8, set your camera up on a tripod. Do several versions. Get the bride in the light, which is usually sitting on a couch or a chair near a window. People's homes, they place their couches and their chairs near windows. So it already gives you the right place to put the bride. She's window lit, nice tight crop from the top of the shoulder to the top of the head, or even tighter if you want. That's up to you. But make the bride turn away from you body-wise so that her body is at a 45-degree angle, her shoulders are at a 45-degree angle across the image diagonally. And turn her face into you. And it just creates a beautiful portrait. Window light it, and they will love you forever.
And do you then try and shoot from a little higher?
Yes, I do. Now, good question. I'm glad you raised that. Anyone would think we had these little notes going on to each other. Should I ask this question, Shelton? We don't, gang. This is just Bruce's intellect.
Bruce is learning. That's what it is.
And why do I shoot from a higher angle? Because it gets the bride to lean. You get the bride to lean forward, which is very complimentary. You know, brides often wear, you know, whatever they call sweetheart necklines. And they do that for a purpose because, you know, the soft, you know, part of the front of the bride or, you know, in down into the cleavage is a very feminine look. It's not necessarily sexy. It's just, well, it can be, depending on how she's dressed or, you know, what kind of boobage is going on. But it's very feminine. And a bride usually wants to look and feel, if anything, feminine on the day. And that lean forward is a feminine approach. It also, as she looks up into the camera, stretches the neck and tightens the skin around the jowls, which, you know, gives her a beautiful curve of the jaw or run of, you know, line of jaw. And this would be especially true if the bride was a little bit on the plumper side or older side, you know, and you can stretch the neck and give her as she looks up into the camera. It's just a lovely technique. It's also an angle not many people, I don't know, photograph from. So, you know, it's a nice way to work. I usually work with the camera on a tripod in that situation so that I can maximize, and we'll be talking about this a lot over the next few podcasts, setting up one situation and maximizing it for different photos. So in this one, I'll get her set up. Okay, make sure the light's perfect, do my test shot, then bang, looking into the camera. Looking away from the camera one way, looking away from the camera the other way, looking down. Then of course I'll step back or zoom back. Include more, include less. So in one setup, you've got 8, 9, 10 photographs, each of them slightly different. And even of course, the thing is that you should take, you know, 2 or 3. It's digital. What the hell? 2 or 3 photos of the same thing. So that, because there'll be nuances of difference between them. You know, as she's looking into the camera, sometimes her eyes will be a little more engaging than at other times. You've got to be careful of blinking and those kinds of things. But, you know, you've got that shot done. Then, of course, maybe, you know, you go back to a nice waist up, head, you know, sort of a half or three quarter portrait of the bride. Make sure you've got those things done. If you have time, then find interesting aspects of the home. Is there a staircase? If there is a staircase, please don't photograph up the staircase, because all you're going to do is look up a bride's jaw and upper nostrils. I see this shot all the time. There is nothing more ugly than looking up at the jowls of a bride when she isn't necessarily jowly to say, but you know, as she looks down into the camera, what happens to a bride's neck and chin as she looks down into the camera? Well, they fold and gather, and it's awful. And if she doesn't, then you're going to be looking straight up her nostrils. And it's not complimentary. Looking up is, you know, at a bride, just makes her look large and jowly and nostrily. It's awful. Climb to the top of the stairs yourself and get her toward the bottom of the stairs. Usually, if it's a two-flight stairs, halfway up there's a window. Use the window light to shine down on the bride, photograph down on the bride, and again, you're getting a perspective that not many people use. You're getting the bride to look up. What's that doing to her jaw and her neck, as we've discussed? You get the same angle, 45 degree. I tell the bride at the beginning of the day, this is the way I want you to stand all day. 45 degree and look at me across your shoulder. Now, I'm not going to use that same pose every time, but it gets her into a zone and a mode not to face the camera front on, which has very little dimension, very little form to it. Just let her know that you want angles and shoulders from her all day. And you tell the bridesmaids the same thing. So there's a couple of photographs. Usually there's a bed photograph. Doesn't have to be done, but, you know, and I'm not a big fan of the lying across the bed thing. It's a bit 70s. You know, we've seen it. But bedrooms usually have you beautiful decor, often. They can be very soft-looking rooms. They're usually lit by a window, a single window, so you've got opportunities here to use the bed shot. But it doesn't necessarily need to be that, oh, look at me, I'm lying on the bed shot. I don't know what purpose that's supposed to serve. It can be a fun shot, you know. You know, lying forward, feet up. You know, it can be all sorts of things. It can be whatever you want. But if there's a nice room, a nice bedroom, use it for a couple of different portraits in a different sort of context. Then there are other areas of the house that you need to search out. And, of course, this is what I do when I arrive. I'll put my gear down, greet everybody, try and remember their names, introduce myself, and then I'll just say, do you mind if I go for a walk around the house? And all I'm going to be doing, what am I doing as I walk around the house, Bruce? I'm looking for the light.
Yep.
Where there's a shaft of light, I know there's a shaft. Even if it's just a skylight in a hallway, I can use that. Ooh, I can use that. Ooh, look at that. That's interesting. I can use that. You get these references in your head. You look for the light in the house, and you know exactly what your plan of action is in the bride's home. And from there, you know where you're going to take the bride to create different portraits. And light can come not only in forms of window light, or skylight light, or door light, or whatever. There are other forms of light in the home. You know, there are lamps, you know, that can be used. Sometimes, you know, they have candles, candelabras. There's props in the home. There's furniture in the home. Try and find ways of combining light with context and make interesting photographs. One of the masters of this is Jerry Gihonis, who we talked about last week. And by the way, thank you for putting me up on the audiotu.com site, Bruce.
That's all right, mate.
One of Australia's wedding photographers. I did not include myself in that list, but thank you for considering me such. I appreciate it. I'd hate everyone to think to go to that website and say, oh, Shelton likes himself a bit, doesn't he? You know, puts himself down a bit. I'm good, but, you know, not as good as these others. Man, these guys are legends. Jerry Gihonis, if you study his work, he can be in the most average of circumstance. And using a combination of light, you know, and metering and composition, he can produce images that if you stood in the same room, you'd say, how the hell did he see that? But the man can see light and context and composition, and he knows exactly what he's going to do when he enters that room. Study his work. And he has a series in Better Photography magazine here in this country where he actually shows you the room, shows you the photograph. The room is this ordinary drab room. You think, man, what would I have done in this situation? Shows you that, yeah, awesome. But shows you the photograph he created and explains the process, how he saw it and what he did to achieve that shot. And it's just fantastic. The man knows, he knows better than I do, find the light and put him in it. And you know, study the work of these masters, because when you are in that home, you will enter a home, it'll be drab, it'll be boring, it'll be very average suburban. Your job is to go in there and make it sing. Make shots that other people just didn't see. Because trust me, if you do that, again, you will be famous. They will love you. They will lay flowers at your feet. It really means that much to people to know what it means to find the light and put them in it. So you've got all these photographs of the bride. The last thing you want to do is stress her out. Do not keep her waiting. Don't hold her up from getting into the car. Finish about 5 to 10 minutes before she has to leave, because she's going to have to gather her things. She may need to do a quick little nature call stop before she heads off to the church, and that could just simply be nerves. It would be wise for her to have a glass of water. And then, of course, she has to get into the car. There's all sorts of things. The house has to be locked up. Things have to be put into the boot of the car. And all sorts of things have to be done. So don't hold her up, you know, until the last minute. These things that she's doing, give her a break before the ceremony from the photography, and if you want a candid shoot, that's fine, but make sure you space your time. I always arrive an hour to an hour and a half before that she leaves, usually at least that, and I give her 5 to 10 minutes before she gets, you know, into the car. In the car, ready for the church, I'll make this the last suggestion before we close off our podcast for today. If you have questions about today's podcast and maybe areas that I've missed of the bride's home, just email me and let me know. But what you do, basically, again, a photo of the bride and whoever it is who's going to be traveling with her in the back seat, usually the father. Sometimes in a single parent family, it's mom or another, you know, valued member of the family. But you get a photograph of her and this other person sharing, you know, nice and close, just near the car. Here we are. You can do that as a candid. You can set something up as a bit of a hug, a cuddle, a kiss on the cheek, whatever. And get that shot done. It should be nice and close to the car. It should be, you know, don't take too long though. Then all I do is I open the back door of the car and I make sure that your bride doesn't get too close to the tires of the car. If her dress scrapes against the tires of the car, which usually have some sort of tire black or something on them, the dress will be potentially ruined for the day. So I always stand between her and the tire and make sure that she comes around me. I get her to sit on the very edge of the seat and keep her feet out of the car. So she basically, you know, she's looking out the back seat with the door open. I do a quick photograph of her holding the bouquet, looking into the camera, fill flash usually, very quick, bang, bang. I'll get that done. If she's a bit nervous, I'll call over the bridesmaid and I'll say to the bridesmaid, stand here right next to me. Then I'll say to the bride, can you just look at Michelle here, you know, Sandra or whatever the girls' names are. Can you just look at the Michelle? And then I'll just whisper to Michelle, who's the bridesmaid. I'll say, look, on the count of three, I want you to pull the funniest, stupidest, idiotic face you can think of. So you've got to find a bridesmaid with a bit of personality. So I'll get the bride to look at the bridesmaid. I'll count to three. The bride will pull a stupid face or do something idiotic, you know, flash a leg, you know, whatever it might be, any stupid thing she can do. And then when that moment is done, I'll get a reaction from the bride, a laugh, a giggle, whatever. Take bang, 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 photograph. I'll just then I'll give the bride a reassuring little, you know, grab of the hand, and we're off to the church. And then from there I just follow the car to the church, or I'll get to the church before them if I'm more au fait with the route than perhaps they are or whatever. But basically that's the run of the home of the bride. Next, we've got to get the bride out of the car and into the church. Then, of course, the ceremony and some of the problems that you can have there, and different cultures, customs, and religions. And then, of course, we'll follow the day from there. So if there's something I've missed at the home of the bride that you want me to talk about, we'll talk about that before we go into the next segment next week, which is the ceremony. And sometimes the ceremony is in a church, a temple, a park, a home, a tent.
On the beach.
It can be a beach. Yes, it can be at all sorts of places. So let's talk about some of the things that you'll encounter at the ceremony, what you have to get, and what you may or may not get, and why it's a good idea to know what you're doing at the ceremony. In the album, the ceremony will not feature, you know, to a large degree, but the photos are important. Very, very important. Let's face it, it's why you're there, because they're getting married.
Yep.
So it has to be covered. So that's next week. And of course, anything about this week you want to know, we'll cover. So that's it. Boy, it's been a long old podcast today, hasn't it, Bruce?
Yep.
Man, a long old podcast today.
Cool.
But, hopefully that's been of some help.
Okay. In the meantime, if you want to drop Shelton an email, it's shelton@audio2.com. If you want to write to me, it's studio@audio2.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll look forward to next week with great anticipation.
I will upload some images to audio2u.com that you can look at, which basically are the visual, you know, representations of the things that I've talked about today. So you get,
beautiful,
you know, a half a dozen ideas of what I've been talking about.
Lovely.
All right.
We'll talk with you next week.
You bet. Looking forward to it.
See ya.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.